Hi, Trailblazers. This is Jeremy LaDuke, and I wanted to let you know about a book I just wrote called Climb, The Risks and Rewards of Elevating Your Brand. It is a nuts and bolts marketing trail guide to help any local business owner find their way through a dense marketing forest. But it's not just a lot of technical marketing jargon. It follows the story of a Main Street bookshop owner as she works to revitalize her family business. And you get to see some practical, everyday ways these tactics can be used. If you'd like more info or to get your copy, please visit theclimb.guide or search for Climb by Jeremy LaDuke wherever you get your books. And now, on to the show.
So here we are, marketing trailblazers. You and I, Jess, warm fire going. Ready for some fireside chats with CMOs and marketing directors and all that. I guess we should tell people who we are. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Jess. This is usually how introductions go.
I know why I'm doing the podcast. How did you get roped into doing the podcast?
I don't really know. You had a meeting that I was not in
on. Oh, yes, yes.
Talked about me behind my back. And then I was sarcastic about being a guest on your podcast one day because that's just so ridiculous. Why would I be a guest about marketing? And then you asked me to be your co-host with Jazz Hands, if I remember correctly.
I think I threw Jazz Hands in there. It worked.
A little begrudgingly.
One of the few times I could say the Jazz Hands worked.
You have to know when to use them.
No, we were sitting around and we were all asking, like, okay, who in the office would be awesome on a podcast? And I think everybody in the room, it may have just been one other person, was like, Jess. Because Jess is smart and witty and all those things that would make for a great podcast host.
That's very complimentary of you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And so here we are. We're jumping out. We got this mountain ahead of us of doing a podcast that we hope will be like the most amazing marketing podcast that all of our listeners have ever heard. And we're ready to hit the trail. But first, while we're on the trail, I'm messing up the analogy a little bit. We're going to sit by a campfire that Lance, our producer. Hey, Lance.
Hey, guys.
Lance doesn't get his own microphone yet. We're on a budget. But it's coming. We're going to have one of those. First, we're going to sit by this campfire and talk to CMOs. And our first one that is going to be here is Jackson Dickert, CMO for Campfire Technology. What is Campfire Technology?
Campfire Technology is a software to help write and create fantasy and sci-fi stories for authors, video game creators, RPGs, all that kind of stuff. It helps you organize and get things going.
So we got the chance to sit down with Jackson and talk a little bit about how he's grown as the CMO of, it's really a startup software, a SaaS software, and how they've been able to use influencer marketing to help them grow. And also he got to send his voice into space. Like engraved on a platinum disc or something and sent to the moon. Isn't that right?
I think the moon, yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool. So, without further ado.
All right, so we have Jackson Dickert, CMO for Campfire Technology, up next.
Let's get this fire blazing. Well, welcome to the campfire, Jackson. Pull up a log.
Thank you very much for having me, Jeremy.
Cool. So, Jackson, Campfire Technology, tell us a little bit about what you guys do and where it came from and all of that.
Yeah, so Campfire Technology is a fully bootstrapped company that I co-founded back in 2018. We sell writing and world-building organizational software. So we help writers tell their stories. So what's really cool about Campfire is, you know, you have a story like Game of Thrones that has, you know, dozens of characters who come in and out of the narrative. And Campfire helps you keep track of all the details. So you can put, you know, character name dates and their birthdays and their eye colors, you know, everything down to the finest minutiae to help you write your story.
So it makes it really easy for if you're wanting to reference something
the background or the characteristics of a particular person or a place, you have, you know, exactly where to go to find it, and you don't have to scroll up through 100 pages of text that you've written.
Yeah, that's exactly it, because there's nothing worse than knowing, I think I wrote something about this somewhere up above, and then having to dig back through, you know, a 200-word manuscript, or not 200-word, 200-page manuscript to try to find that detail.
Right.
So this helps you save a lot of time.
And the embarrassment of, like, reading your finished work and seeing that they were blue-eyed at the beginning and then green-eyed.
Oh, there's nothing worse.
Two-thirds of the way.
Because, you know, then in book two, you've got to figure out a way to retcon that. Be like, oh, yeah, they wear contacts. Or, you know, magic happened. Whatever it is.
Well, and you yourself, you are an author, right? And that's kind of how you stumbled upon the original technology. Or tell us that story of you writing and some of the work you've done and how you kind of came to be a part of the Campfire team.
Yeah, so I am an author. I published a YA story about a bunch of teenagers at summer camp called The Quest for the Golden Plunger. And so while I was writing, I happened to just be scrolling through Reddit one day, followed a bunch of different, you know, writing subreddits for like advice and tips and to find good resources, and stumbled across this guy who had made this, you know, kind of beta version of the software he'd been working on for a month or two. And I was like, this looks really cool, but it's missing, you know, some stuff that writers need. And, you know, I thought that there were some ways that he could go about selling it better. So I reached out to him and brought me on for 2 weeks, and I did such a good job that ended up bringing me on full time and gave me equity in the company. So, yeah, that was kind of it. So, what's really cool is, you know, we've been in business for about 4.5 years now. I've probably met him in person less than 10 times. He was, ended up being a 19-year-old, from Boston. And so I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, and it's one of those crazy stories that shouldn't have worked, but it did. So.
It's kind of one of those proverbial startup SaaS sort of stories as well, where you never meet each other hardly, and
right.
And it's just, yeah, it's kind of all coming together in a bootstrap sort of way. It's pretty cool. So your book, The Quest for the Golden Plunger, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's about a bunch of teenagers, and I guess they go to summer camp and they're trying to win the Golden Plunger by there's a couple like different tasks and things. There's like this paintball fight that they have to do, and all kinds of other things. And yeah, that's kind of the crux of it. It's a humorous YA novel with some scatological humor in there, so it's kind of perfect for teenage boys.
I love scatological humor.
God, me
How about
too.
You, Jess?
I have no idea what that means.
Scatological humor?
No,
like poop jokes.
It's poop jokes.
Oh, well, okay, that makes sense. Why I don't know what's happening right now.
So it's fun that you actually yourself you're an Eagle Scout, right?
Yeah. So when I first started trying to write, I wanted to write a fantasy novel, a la Brandon Sanderson, George R. R. Martin, or Tolkien, and it did not go well. It did not go well at all. So I ended up writing something a little closer to home that I felt like I knew a lot better than some far off fantasy world.
Oh, and just so everyone is, we did not know Jackson was an Eagle Scout before he agreed to do this podcast. And so I just think it plays well into the marketing Trailblazers and the Mountain Conquer, all of that. So that's kind of fun. What was your Eagle Scout project?
So I built a, what do I call it? It's sort of like a open shed, I guess. It was like a shed without walls for
like
the
carport?
Track team. Not quite, because it had like shelves on it for the track team to put their poles on for pole jumping, because they were having a problem where, you know, it would rain and get really wet. It was at my high school, Hardin Valley Academy. And so they're having a problem where, you know, it would rain and their poles would get wet, and then they would fall off whenever they trained in the rain. So it helps keep the poles dry. So
sounds like that may have been like a life-saving project as well.
You know, I didn't want to come right out and say that, but, you know, off the record, I have probably saved upwards of 400 lives.
Wow.
Through that effort.
It's
an
honor.
Teenage high school boys,
right.
too.
Yeah.
Well, boys
the
and
youth
girls.
Of America.
Yeah. Yeah. The youth of America.
They owe you their life, and they should buy a copy of your book.
Right.
Just for that.
Absolutely. And 10% of all earnings.
Yes, yeah.
For the rest of their life, you know. That would be the right thing to do.
The only thing morally obligated, they should do it. Cool. All right. So, and you've also not only authored, you've also had kind of a YouTube career as well. 1,800 videos or over 1,800 videos on YouTube as a gamer.
Yeah, I did Let's Plays throughout middle school and high school, and then when I started college, I didn't. Wasn't able to kind of keep that up so much, but part of that was also because, you know, early on it was when Skyrim had first come out and I was really interested in the lore of that more than even the game itself. So I made a lot of videos talking about the lore, and those really did really well. I was very fortunate in for that, especially because at the time, you know, I was like 14. I didn't know you could do multiple takes. Or, you know, go back and edit out your stutters or, you know, whatever. So they weren't the best videos, but thankfully the information was good and the topic was very popular. So and it was kind of before like Johnson & Johnson and Coke had pulled out of YouTube. So the ad money was fantastic.
Well, and you were in a real sense kind of learning from the ground floor how to use these platforms and the power of them.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, nothing blew my mind like, you know, the day I woke up and I had 500,000 views on a video, and that just boggled my mind. I was like, wow, you know, this could actually like take me places.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So fast forward, you're at Campfire. You guys have a little over 50,000 monthly users now, which is pretty incredible. I mean, for a company that's been, you know, within 4 or 5 years, in a very niche market. So tell us, how did you guys get there? What were some of the marketing tactics you've used, and how have you helped grow the company to where it's at now?
Yeah, so, you know, in that first week or so, we tried a couple of, you know, a lot of different stuff, really. We were trying Facebook ads, you know, when you go Google how to market, these are the things that come up, right? And they're not all necessarily the best ideas. And the thing that ended up working and really launching things and getting us off the ground was influencer marketing. And that wasn't something that I had read on any blog post on Google or anything. That was just from my own knowledge of, wow, you know, if you go to the right sources to promote, you know, your product or whatever, you can reach a lot more people. And it comes from a trusted source, right? It's not just some banner ad or, you know, something like that. So it carries a lot more weight to it, the recommendation does. So we ended up going through influencers, and that is how we grew the company to what it is today for the most part.
So for anybody that's listening that thinks that influencer marketing is a lot of BS, I was in that boat for a while. Anytime I would see someone on TikTok or Facebook and they would be pitching a product, I would automatically kind of distrust them a little bit. But after talking to several folks and then after seeing and hearing about the effectiveness of them, I heard from our team and from other folks that yes, they see people that they trust that they follow on different platforms talking about a product, and they automatically say, okay, yes, I'm interested in this product. And that's paid off for you all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's basically how we've grown the business, and we've done influencers of all different sizes too. Like we've probably the smallest people we've sponsored have had a couple thousand subscribers, and all the way up to, I think maybe the biggest is 1 million subscribers on YouTube.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And we do primarily do YouTube influencers. We've tried podcasts before and they don't do as well for us, I think, because Campfire is very visual software. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of like panels and images. It's you kind of have to see it to really be able to understand it, because to someone who doesn't know what it is, it's like, okay, it sounds like a fancy word processor, but it's so much more than that. So podcasts have never really done well for us, but YouTube integrated mentions is mainly where
we're here to prove you wrong today.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you even have the interest in riding, go check out Campfire and say that you heard about it here. Just joking. So I have a feeling that a lot of this is a fairly new tactic in the broad history of marketing. Influencer marketing in this sense is somewhat new, and not a lot of people have the nuts and bolts experience with it. So kind of walk us through what that looks like. Like, how do you approach an influencer, or how do you even find an influencer that would work well for your brand? And then how do you approach them, and what's that look like?
Yeah. So one thing that was really fortunate for me was prior to starting Campfire, I had been watching a lot of YouTube in this space to begin with. I've been watching college lecturers, you know, discussing how to write good fiction, all the way to like teenagers just sitting in their room talking about, I like this book or I don't like this one for these reasons. Just, you know, totally, I was already immersed in this community. And that's an important part, I think, of choosing influencers. You know, you can always just go on Google or, you know, YouTube and just, you know, search a term that's related to your product and then watch videos of what comes up. But you have to go a little bit more in depth than that, I think. I think it's good to watch a couple of their videos, get a feel for who this person is, and then also make sure the rest of their content aligns. You know, maybe they did one video about, you know, writing and the rest they talk about comic books. Well, comic books has stories in it, but the people who want to read and maybe even make comic books, Campfire wouldn't necessarily be our primary demographic. So I would say, you know, go to YouTube, try to find something that's a good fit. And then as far as outreach, what's great about YouTube is on the About section of their channel, there's a little hidden email address, and you have to fill out a little CAPTCHA to get access to it. And not every channel has this. It's up to the influencer whether or not it's there. But you fill that out and boom, you've got their email. The thing that drives me most nuts about like influencers who are trying to, you know, grow or get sponsorships or whatever is not being able to find their email. They don't have a website. They don't have a YouTube channel. It's like, I'm trying to get in touch with you, and it's so hard if you don't have your email right there. So then I'll send them an email, just, you know, reach out, kind of give a overview. I'll usually personalize them pretty well, you know, talk about specific videos of theirs that I watched and the things that I specifically like about it that I think will make it a good fit. I think personalization is really important because you have to understand these influencers are getting hundreds of emails per week from everything from scams to, you know, genuine people who are interested in promoting their products to just, you know, fans who just, you know, want to get in touch with them. So you have to be genuine and you have to personalize it to be able to, you know, get across to them that you're not just another one of these scam artists, I guess. So then I'll kind of give a little pitch about like what our product is and tell them, you know, I'm interested in a paid sponsorship, because there's also this big trend in influencers where companies just want to send them something for free and expect a 20-minute video about that. And that's just not how it works.
That doesn't pay the bills.
No.
Yeah. And these people are legitimately trying to make a living doing this in the ones that are worth pitching to, I'm guessing, this is like their living.
Yeah. A lot of them that are doing this for a living. And that's the main thing. Unless you're reaching out to really small people, a lot of them are already doing it for a living and they don't necessarily need your money to keep doing it for a living. They've got Patreon, they've got YouTube ads, and they've got no shortage of other sponsors that they can go with. Mm.
So how do you determine what's that value? And do they come to you and say, this is my price? Or do you offer them a price? How's that work?
So a lot of times, if it's, you know, kind of a seasoned influencer, they'll have a price already kind of set. And then it's up to you to decide, does this make sense for us or not? And for that, you just kind of have to look at, you know, your CPA and your lifetime value of a customer. And you have to kind of evaluate, does this make sense or not? There's this, because as you say, this is a, you know, kind of recent and emerging landscape for marketing, but it's already changing a lot. I've already seen people go from setting their prices based on the number of subscribers, which is silly. You should never do that, because subscribers is just a vanity metric. To a lot of people nowadays set their prices based on views. This is still pretty commonplace, but I'm kind of on the newer edge of this. I think that's also a bit silly. It's fine for the first one. But at the end of the day, views are sort of also a vanity metric. So the thing that makes the most sense is to do it based on CPA.
And how do Is that something you can measure beforehand or get an idea of beforehand?
And that's where it gets a little tricky. Unless the influencer has some idea of you know, how many people might take that action, unless you have some idea, it is tricky. So a lot of times we've sort of figured out, you know, about a $20 CPM is safe for us to do a sponsorship. So a lot of times for that first sponsorship, we'll reach out and offer like a $20 CPM, usually with a minimum and with a maximum. That way, you know, if the video flops for whatever reason, influencer still gets paid for their hard work. And if it goes viral, we're not on the hook for $1 million.
Sure.
And so we'll pay based on that. And then with the data from that, we can kind of go back and, you know, lay it out to the influencer. And this is where, you know, I guess we're a little different and on the cutting edge. A lot of companies don't want to share whatever data they have with the influencer, right? Because the data at the end of the day is power. And this is, like I said, the emerging, the changing landscape, because these influencers, they don't necessarily, especially the big ones, they don't need your money. They have gone beyond just being an individual and they're a brand on their own. They can make their own products and sell those to their audience. And a lot of times they can make more money doing that than selling your product. So I think it's important to share that data with influencers so they can see, you know, how much, like what are they driving for your company? And they also understand, of course, that you need to make a profit. You know, industry standard is something like, you know, a return of 3 times whatever you're paying them. So they understand you need to be making a profit too, but it's important that they know that they're being compensated fairly for the work that they're doing.
For you all, $20 CPM is what you're shooting for, which is, honestly, when you think about the world of advertising, that's not a bad deal for an authoritative voice on video promoting your product.
Right. I mean, a lot of the, like, you know, little, you know, what, you know, influencer marketing, you know, there's all these blogs and they have no idea what they're talking about, or articles talking, you know, with no idea what they're talking about. And a lot of them recommend 30. And, you know, 30 is appropriate for some, you know, in some topics. It's the same way, you know, if you're running a cost per click campaign, you know, one click for a lawyer is going to be $50, or for a psychic, it'll be $80, you know, but then
unfortunately, we've never gotten to market for it a psychic. But if there are any listening,
that's on the list.
Man. Yeah. List of clients right there.
They're expensive to run ads on. But, you know, for something else, you know, a lot of other stuff, it's like, you know, cost per click is $1 or something. So it sort of just depends. But, you know, CPM of $20 to $30 is probably fair, especially for, you know, establishing, you know, what the performance might be.
That's a lot going on.
Yeah.
That's a lot to keep up with. That's a lot of moving pieces.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So do you have, how big is your team to keep up with everything, like as far as keeping up with your software itself and keeping up with all of that stuff too?
Yeah, so I think right now our team, let's say we've got a UI UX designer. We've got an artist who also helps with the in-house editing. And then we've got 2 developers, and our CEO also does some developing. So that's 5 right there. And then we've got me and a girl who does social media. So right now we've got 7 employees, and we're looking to add more here relatively soon. I'm kind of one-man band on the marketing side, but I've got help from the social media, thankfully.
That's cool. That's good that you're not, like, completely doing it all yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. She is extremely helpful, especially with the things that I'm not good at, you know, as far as, like, graphic design and things like that. So I really lean on her for that sort of thing.
More of the visual.
Yeah.
That's cool, because it is a very, like, I fully see how the visual side of it is very beneficial.
Yeah, that's really important for the influencer stuff, especially. a lot of times we'll give the influencers sort of like a couple different options. We'll give them like a script, like, you know, a suggested script, and let them make tweaks to it, because I think that's really important. If you send an influencer a script, you know, a 60-second script, and you give them no wiggle room on it, it's just going to read like somebody from this company wrote it.
Yeah.
They know their audience better than you do, so it's important to let them kind of take the reins a little bit there. But a lot of times we'll also send them like a 60-second sort of trailer video that shows off features for them to edit around, or we'll also send screenshots, because since Campfire is so cool, like cool and visual, we have great screenshots.
That's cool. I can also see how like trusting someone you don't know to explain your product well and effectively and sell it would be potentially challenging.
Yeah, and that's why, like, for our, you know, standard contract, and this is also just pretty standard in the industry, is I get to review the spot before it actually goes live, because, you know, I've been sent some previews that I'll have influencers that I've never worked with before, and they'll nail it their first time, great, no notes. And I'll have, you know, some people come back and, you know, what they've done, it's like clear they don't understand the product. They don't understand what, you know, what they're even pitching to their own audience right now, which is a travesty, because it's, you know, their brand. They should do their research and figure out, you know, is this a good fit for my brand?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you use any sort of like software to keep track of like the which influencers are good, where they're at with certain things, all that sort of stuff?
So let's see. For our analytics, we use Retool. It's like built in. I think it took some dev finagling, you know, black magic computer science things to get it all set up. But we've got a couple really cool dashboards on there that are directly linked up to, you know, sales and things like that. So we can really quickly get analytics on, you know, how everything is doing. And at the end of every month, we'll write up, or at the beginning of each month, rather, we'll write up a report on, you know, what is working, what didn't, what are we going to keep doing, what's not worth keep doing, that sort of thing.
So in some senses, it seems like influencer marketing is almost like a new version of celebrity endorsements. How is it like that, and how isn't it like that?
Yeah, so that's also, you know, why I think a lot of times influencers, they start as a creator and then sort of become an influencer, and then a lot of times they'll sort of become their own brand. And so in a lot of ways, it very much is like a celebrity endorsement, depending on, you know, the size. You know, with smaller creators, since they don't have as much reach a lot of that time, instead of doing like a 60-second ad, we'll do like a dedicated video. And those are much more expensive, obviously, generally. But, you know, with someone who has like a million subscribers, for them to just make 20-minute video about just your product would be absurdly expensive. But for someone who only has a couple thousand, having a couple of these, you know, 20-minute videos that are right there available for people who are interested in your product that come up when they search you on YouTube is fantastic.
What is your favorite part about what you do?
My favorite part about what I do has got to be the people. At the end of the day, like, I'm such an extroverted person. I love the people. Getting to work with, you know, some of the really talented and passionate influencers that I get to talk to, and also, you know, authors and sometimes publishers. It's so much fun to get to work with other people who are really passionate about what they do, and like in the niche that I am also most interested in, is so much fun. So much fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're working, since you're on the marketing side, you're working more with the influencers and less of actual users?
So,
or kind of both?
Yeah, I would say I'm more on the influencer side, and the Amanda, who helps out with the social media, she is good bit more hands-on with the users themselves, and we'll collect like survey data and respond on socials and things like that.
Cool. How many users do you all have right now?
So I think the total number is like over 200,000, but then, you know, monthly users is something more like 50,000 per month.
A lot to keep up with, for sure.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
Cool. What has kind of been your trajectory? Have you really exploded more recently? Has it been a steady climb? Was it a lot up front?
Yeah. So when we started out, we had this initial software, and it was called Campfire Pro, and it was a one-time purchase, downloadable software. It had a lot of problems. Our CEO who coded it, you know, was still an undergrad at the time, and so wasn't, you know, like a master coder, computer science guy. So it had a lot of just, the way we put it is the skeleton wasn't great. And so while it did what it needed to do at first, we quickly grew out of it. So really early on, we saw some explosive growth from influencers, which was awesome. And then we continued to see that well into COVID because, you know, everybody stayed home and they wanted to write novels. So that was a really awesome time for us. But pretty quickly, we realized we're going to need to develop something better than this, so that way we can keep adding things that people want, because Campfire Pro, it couldn't have a manuscript, it couldn't have language support, you know, all this different stuff. So we started developing a web app on campfirewriting.com, and that does a lot of the things that Campfire Pro did, just all of them better and with a lot more flexibility, where we can develop it faster. And so we're really excited about that. And one thing that the web app has that the downloadable app didn't is it's got a subscription option for the pricing. So you can get it for lifetime or as a subscription. And so what's really been nice about that is it's a little bit of pressure off of me doing marketing, just knowing that we have a certain number of MRR that's, you know, monthly recurring revenue that's coming in every month that I don't have to worry about, you know, making a certain number of sales. So everybody gets paid. So that's one thing that I really love about it is the subscriptions. And then moving forward, we're kind of going to be, we're going to add another moat to our software, and we're going to have a marketplace for people who want to like buy books.
Cool.
So the people who make books with our software can sell them too.
Cool. How soon is that happening? Like, is that a now thing or is that in the next few years?
So right now, we've actually got the side of our website where you can publish your stories. That's already live. But this year in October, we're going to add monetization. So sort of there's a couple things up in the air with exactly how fast and how aggressively we're going to do that. But yeah, it'll be at least this year.
Cool.
Yeah.
So people will be able to go straight from writing a story to publishing it and getting it out there and within a few clicks.
Yeah, right on Campfire.
That's powerful.
It is. And the things that we're really excited about is so first of all, you know, Amazon, you can only publish the book. You can't publish your world building and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age with huge fantasy authors like Brandon Sanderson, right? If people could go read his world building or his character profiles, they would. They absolutely would. And so that's kind of the idea here is people can also sell their world building as like an add-on to the book. And on top of that, we're giving 80% royalties, which is the most aggressive.
That's unheard of.
Yeah. For publishing especially, you know, Audible gives 25% royalties if you take your audiobook wide and publish on other platforms, and they give you 40% if you only publish on Audible. So we hope to add audiobook support too and just kind of, you know, blow Amazon out of the water.
Yeah.
So y'all are like Campfire publishing for the people.
Yes, absolutely.
you can use that tagline if you want to.
Yeah, I think I'm going to write that down actually.
That's awesome. So you, in talking before the podcast and even hearing some of your stories now, you definitely have an excitement for this product. Like you've personally benefited from it. You've used it. You love it. How has that influenced how you market it? And what would you say to people who are maybe in a position that where they're marketing something they don't really enjoy or care about?
Yeah, so it is such a blessing to be able to, you know, work in a space that I'm really passionate and excited about. If you're working in a space where you don't, I'd say, you know, anything you can find, I guess the silver lining, whether it's the product itself or just knowing that you're doing something that people are enjoying and that it helps them in some way. at the end of the day, I think that's what's most important to me. If we're making a writing software that, you know, people didn't like, or, you know, that had no benefit, it wouldn't be nearly as rewarding. But we hear all the time from people, you know, how helpful it is to them in their process.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because even as, like, I am not a writer in the slightest, but I think seeing the world building side of, like, a book or a story I really like would be really, really cool.
And that's what we're hoping. We're hoping, yeah, you know, people will be interested in that sort of thing for the stories they really love.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I know there are some that I love that I won't name names, but they're notoriously not great with their story building, and they've got a huge book series, and it's a bummer when things don't line up. So actually, like, seeing it broken down, I think, would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Can users then go on and, or the readers go on, and could this help spur fan fiction on as well?
So fan fiction is actually an interesting area, because we don't want to deal with all the legal, you know, mm-hmm. issues of using, you know, allowing users to use other IPs and things like that. So right now, there's no fan fiction actually allowed on Campfire, and, you know, you can't use any copyrighted images or anything like that. So
probably smart.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, at least in the short term. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you do have the ebook publishing platform coming out, and you've got a couple of big author sponsorships / publishing deals coming out as well, right? You know, tell a little bit about those.
Yeah, so this August, we're actually going to be publishing bestselling author Anne Christie, and her book is called The Never-Ending End of the World. It comes out August 8th, and it's a speculative sci-fi novel, kind of about the end of the world. And it's what's really cool about it is a really unusual apocalypse. It's not like, you know, fire and brimstone or whatever. It's one day time just stops, and people are caught in loops of time, doing the same thing for a few seconds, minutes, hours.
And that would be horrible.
Yes. Yeah,
like Groundhog Day.
Well, yeah. And so she wrote it during COVID.
Oh, where that's appropriate.
Yeah, where it all felt like we were all doing the same thing every day, and there wasn't much spice or variety mm-hmm. to life. But if you interact with one of these people stuck in loops, they kind of go crazy and attack you. So it's got this zombie aspect to the novel, but it's not a zombie novel, and it's very thoughtful and contemplative. So we're really excited about that one.
And one of the activities you got going on with Anne Christie is the lunar deal, right? Something's kind of going skyrocketing, right? Going up into outer space.
Yeah, the Lunar Codex.
I knew it was. I couldn't remember the name of it. Lunar Codex.
Yeah, yeah. So that was founded by Samuel Peralta. He's really cool. He's a best-selling author, and he actually won an Emmy for his work. Some of his work appears in Netflix's Love, Death, Robots, if anybody's seen that. So it's very cool. Mm-hmm. But Anne's book is going to be going to the moon, I believe, next spring. And then I'll actually have a short story going with Anne's audiobook next fall. So very exciting. Campfire goes to the moon.
That's huge. Yeah, yeah, seriously. Yeah. Like you can get your book here and at a moon near you.
Exactly.
All right.
Aliens are going to hear my voice, and that's something I'm so excited about.
Yeah, because is it an audio? It's like an audio encoding of your book. Is that the deal?
Yeah. So to be honest with you, I don't even know exactly how they do it. Somebody told me something about laser etching on gold discs or something. So, you know, aliens could read it millions of years from now. So
we gotta hope they like it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, hopefully so.
We don't need a Mars attacks.
Right. Well, we probably won't be here by the time they find it, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Not me and you. Millions of years from now? I don't want to live that long.
Well, Jackson, thank you so much for being on the inaugural podcast for Marketing Trailblazers. It was exciting. Good stories, good info about influencers, mm-hmm. and we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you guys very much for having me. It was awesome.
Marketing Trailblazers with Jeremy LeDuc and Jess Tackett is produced by me, Lance Pettiford, co-produced by Kaylee Eastep. Graphic and web design by Will Lunsford, and guest support provided by Kaylee Swaggerty. Marketing Trailblazers is a production of Epic 9 Marketing Outfitters, helping ambitious brands grow since 2014. If you are a CMO looking to conquer some mountains, or you need a CMO to help get you to the top, then contact Epic 9 and get started with a Basecamp consultation at epic9.com. Want more great content to help fuel your marketing adventures? Sign up for exclusive content and get early access to our Marketing Mountain School content at marketingtrailblazers.com.